This is Renegade Broadcasting.
That was Abzu right there with Never Blow Out the Eastern Candle. They're a band out of Texas. And this is the General Antiochus here, Renegade Roundtable. It is a cold towards the end of February night here, and we invite your calls. I had a very long couple of days here. Went to the National Policy Institute conference and want to reflect a little bit on that. It was just really a good time, guys. All around, you know, we had about, I'd say 50 to 100 people in my count, but that's just a rough estimate there. And yeah, I mean, it was an event, you know. Finally, nice to get off the internet and see people in person who hold your views. No real issues. The biggest hurdle was just getting to the thing. Washington, D.C. is pretty far from where I am here in Connecticut. And I'd say, you know, when I MapQuested it, it said 6 hours or so. So I wasn't about to test my vehicle's capability to see if, you know, I can actually make it there and back without getting stuck in Maryland or Philadelphia or New Jersey or something. So I ended up taking a bus there. And, yeah, I mean, it was just a long, long ride, there and back, but, yeah, I mean, it was great, man. We, I did go with a girl, there were women there. It was nice to see some, a mix. I'd say most of the age grouping was pretty young. And that's one of the things Richard Spencer mentioned on the interview I did with him. You know, just the way it's promising to see young faces out there at this conference. And, you know, it was, we showed up a little late, I mean, to put it lightly. By the time I walked in with my companion, it was already about, I'd say, 8:30, and the thing started at 6, so we did overshoot there. I guess, you know, our bus time, or however it worked out, you know, it is what it is. And we walked in having already kind of missed the speeches, but I think it was all recorded. I did see a camera there. So, you know, that probably will be available for you guys soon. And, you know, when we walked in, it was pretty much a question and answer segment at the time. So, you know, that went on for probably half an hour or so, because it went to, I guess, 6 to 9:30. And this was at the National Press Club, I believe, yes. So, you know, it was pretty much Richard Spencer and Jared Taylor fielding questions, and Peter Brimlow was there as well, of the book Alien Nation, which was a great book about our immigration crisis that came out years ago, I think probably in the 90s maybe. And, yeah, the room was pretty packed. It was full. And like I say, it was a mix. I mean, you had the generational complete span there, but for the most part, I saw probably 20s and 30s was a good core grouping there, and then you had your older folks, but not too many young kids. There was one kid, I guess, who was 17, he said. So. Yeah, and as far as the male-female ratio, you know, it was mostly men when you go to a heavy metal show, it's mostly men. It's not surprising. But there were women there, and it was good to see. So, yeah, I'm going to go. I'm kind of going to do this show running back and forth between rooms because I got my computer in one room and I'm talking in another. So I'm going to have to check on the board every couple minutes and see who's if anybody's on so I can pick up calls. And so forgive me for that if there's a little delay in between statements or thought process. But, yeah, I just had a blast. It was an overall great time, you know, just finally just being able to commune in the flesh with people you know you feel comfortable with that are already on the same wavelength, and it just becomes, you know, the movement actually, you know, even though that's the original cause and reason, purpose, why we're there in the first place, it kind of falls away, falls to the side, and just becomes a religious kind of thing where you're just in the moment, in the now, living, enjoying yourself, finally with people who think like you, who, you know, understand you. And it's, you know, like a revelation because you don't have to explain anything to these people. They get it. They're already there. It's like you have brothers and sisters and best friends, a room full of best friends without even knowing them. Because you know, granted, we all have our own experiences, but you just know from the way people carry themselves that they are on the same page, and then you just get to have fun and just be sociable and you know, laugh and be sarcastic. You know, there was a lot of political discussion as I would have expected, you know, but for the most part, you know, after the actual conference itself, there was like a little after party get together thing, and you know, I don't know what percent of the original room was there, but you know, there were a core group, and they we all went to this bar kind of place where you could smoke. You could smoke cigarettes and cigars. That was throwback to the old days right there. That was kind of fun. Yeah, and we all had our tables. I'd say there was probably, you know, maybe one, two, three, four sections, different tables with so many people gathered around each one. And, you know, it was a way to get more intimate, a way to start experiencing individuals, get contacts, get numbers, and just trade ideas. And, you know, I was there basically just promoting Renegade. you know, that was one of the great things about it because, you know, every person that I brought it up to, a lot of them had already known about us. You know, it was just so fun to see the fruits of our labor in real life, you know, with people who actually are listeners. And, you know, it's like, oh, you're the general, you know, and, you know, one guy, you know, he had seen my thing with Tom Hartman, the call in there. And, I mean, yeah, it was just a love fest, man. A lot of people hearing of Renegade and just giving praise and saying all good things. I mean, it was. I didn't encounter anybody who had problems or anything like that, you know. So there was one, I guess one person brought up the Joshua Bonehill thing, which I'm not even up on, to be honest. You know, I know there's some controversy there or something, and he just asked, you know, what's going on with that. And I said, look, you know, I personally just don't pay attention to movie drama. I try to stay out of that. I don't know, from what I know, I guess, you know, just Drew made some movie about him or clip and, you know, was showing him to be some kind of I don't know, fraud or something, a person who makes up stories about people that aren't true. And this is I'm getting from just my friend Wolf CT, who's been paying attention to the whole thing. I just don't have time to pay attention to all of this stuff. It's just too much. But I just told the person that in that instance that I'm just I'll do the Jerry Springer thing if I don't have to. Other than that, that was really it. Everybody else, more than, I can probably 5, 6, 7 people had heard of us, and I'd say that was a good count. That was definitely gratifying there. I was able to meet and talk with Jared Taylor and Richard, as well as I did the interview with Richard, so that was great to meet him in person. It's just I don't know, it's just a different world, when it's like there they are right there in front of you, instead of being disconnected by all these miles and just separated by the computer screen, so that was cool. I picked up a couple books, got Taylor's book, White Identity, which I think I already might have a copy of that Jim gave me, Racial Consciousness in the 21st Century, and he signed it. That was great. We got For Dana, Comrade in the Struggle, so that was cool. Also picked up The Chosen People, A Study of Jewish Intelligence and Achievement, by Richard Lynn, who co-authored The Bell Curve with Herrnstein and Murray. Oh, wait a minute, Richard Lynn. I don't know if he... Herrnstein and Murray did The Bell Curve. I don't know why I was thinking he had something to do with that. Let me see here. What did he do? He wrote Dysgenics. Oh, that's what it is. He wrote Dysgenics, Eugenics, Race Differences in Intelligence. So that's a Scott Townsend publisher type person. He's an emeritus professor of psychology at the University of Ulster. I did bring up Scott Townsend Publishers, a great source of intellectual books on, the race question and that type of thing. But, Richard Lynn, this is an important kind of Kevin McDonald-y topic here of knowing the enemy type thing, because one thing we don't want to do is underestimate them. And I'll tell you one thing is they are definitely not dumb, that's for sure. So, but yeah, those are the two that I got. I got a lot more for you guys. I mean, so much happened. I was not able to give a speech because, like I said, I didn't have a chance to actually, we walked in so late that, there was the question and answer segment. I had my hand up, but, just one too many. But, it was a very jovial atmosphere, very kind of happy, upbeat, high energy type thing. Like, you just, your spirit was lifted just by being in there and seeing so many people that, on the one hand, it's not, it's a little odd in the sense that you don't really know any of these people. So there's always that creeping paranoia of, who's who and that type of thing. Do I recognize this guy from Facebook or not? You ask people their name, they don't give you their real name, and, it's all that kind of thing. But, that's really just comes with the territory. Beyond that, once you start connecting, once you start talking and you get a feel for somebody and you, you know that they just are legit and genuine, then, you drop your guard and you start to lose loosen up and just let it loose. You know, and it was very humorous and comedic in that way. I just had fun. I mean, they had drinks there, which was nice, but it closed early. And I don't know, for me, the highlight of the party was actually the after party at the bar thing. And you know, we were able to just sit around, and you know, I've always said that you don't really know somebody until you sit down and had a brew with them. You know, that might be a working class type of idea there, but that's where I'm at. And you know, there were a couple little anomalies and things that I guess I'll bring up. I'm gonna go look at the call board in the other room. So you guys give me like 30 seconds, and I'll be back. Okay, here we've got the... got a 903 number. 903, what's your name? Where you're calling from?
This is Justin calling from Texas.
Hey, Justin, what's up, man?
Hey, I was excited to hear about the MPI conference, and I can't wait for the videos to be available. But I was wondering, too, what was the presence like outside in terms of the whole anti-white crowd?
Yeah, that was one thing that was strangely absent.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, well, I can only speak, I don't know what happened earlier in the day. Like I said, I walked in with the person I went at, it was already 8:30, so this thing started at 6. And, you know, we had no problems getting in. We just found it. I didn't see anyone out there protesting at all or anything like that. I don't know if something had occurred earlier because I wasn't there. But we caught a taxi. We found the place, and we just walked in. And that was it. As far as any kind of opposition or infiltration, there was one girl there, and... you know, she yelled out, "I think you guys are all racist," and she stomped out of the room, and we all laughed at her. The whole room laughed at her. It was a really funny scene. And you know, I don't know if she had given a speech before that, because somebody had said that there was a woman who gave a speech, and I don't know if that was connected. You know, if she was maybe there and didn't know what she was getting into type of thing, you know, or didn't understand the audience. I don't want to say, because I just don't know. When from the point I got there, that's what happened. She yelled that out, she left, and we all just kind of looked at each other and laughed, and it was just a funny kind of moment. And that was it. That was the summation of like resistance there. Other than that, it was just a room full of racialists and, you know, just talking about nationalism and just geopolitics and, you know, all the usual stuff that we discuss here only in person. So.
Well, that's a change. I think, I mean, just watching video at past conferences, you know, it looks like they make their little line and hang out all night pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, for me, it was, you know, the thing that was really a blast was, you know, at the end of the question and answer segment, when you could just walk around and socialize, and everybody just kind of was talking to each other, you know, and you could, you know, that's when you could buy books or just get to, you know, just have a conversation. That's when I, you know, made sure to talk with Jared and Peter Brimlow. You know, Richard as well. And you know, it was fun. And then it got even better when we all went over to the bar across the street. You know, I have some funny things to relay there as well. Yeah, I mean, it was It was like, I think, $65 to get in. If you were under 30, it was $25 or something like that. Because we had gotten there so late, and, you know, I mentioned to the guy who was at the door that I had just interviewed Richard Spencer. So the guy gave me a press pass, and, you know, we actually didn't have to pay to get in, which was great, you know. And, you know, that really helped out because between the subways and the you know, the bus ride and, you know, just everything, it became a pretty costly time. Yeah, I mean, it was a blast, man. I mean, this is why I said, you know, I just think we need to form groups, we need to form organizations, think tanks, whatever you want to call it, and just have events and have people show up in person. I mean, we got to really, this internet stuff, other than using it to get together and network in person, it's pointless. It's useless, in my opinion.
We really do need a lot more in-person interaction. I think it'd be positive. And I don't know, I mean, is there anything in the works in the United, any kind of renegade events? Sometimes I wonder if they'll do any kind of renegade broadcasting get together.
You know, I would love to, man. I absolutely would. I'd love to put on a concert or a show or something. I mean, you know, I've thought about this. I mean, I know, you know, a few bands that are racialist bands. You know, that was one idea I had. I mean, it doesn't have to be a concert. I mean, it can be anything. But, yeah, no, I mean, really not as of yet, maybe in the future, possibly. You know, this is one of the things that is a little depressing about the movement is just how hard it is to get people to come out to things. And that's why seeing so many faces there was very inspiring because, you know, you get people, they promise to go, and then they crap out or something comes off. You know, we're all tied to our personal lives, our work lives. So it's not easy to get people to be somewhere at a certain time, at a certain place, you know, and I gave a few calls to different people, you know. I invited Angelo, but, you know, it was kind of last-minute notice, so he didn't really have a chance to prepare or anything, and he had other things. You know, and I did reach out to, you know, a few different people, but I only ended up going with this girl I know, and that was it. But, you know, just getting there is a task. Because we're so far away. We all live so far from each other, too, you know? So. You know, I'm going to go back.
It'd be useful to have, you know, it would be useful to have events, you know, in different regions. I know, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, being in Texas.
No, totally.
It's
a long trip. That's a great point, man. Absolutely. You know, form chapters type of thing. You know, it's this is how it's got to be done. We need some type of structure. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know what to tell people. You know, it's like either you can't bitch about things if, you know, you're not at least trying to do something. You know, so I mean, if you know, that's why I don't knock anybody, regardless of, you know, if they have good intentions and they're not, it's not, you know, obviously counterproductive, you know, working with what we have, you know, it's, any event is great to see. Now, we have American Renaissance coming up, you know, and there's so many people that just bitch and moan and look, I mean, I don't think anybody is perfect. I mean, William Pierce was my favorite of all the, you know, the leaders out there, but
me too.
You know, he's passed years ago, and I just you know, we got to carry on the flame, and that's the thing is there's different characters, different figures, different organizations. If you don't like this one, you know, go support another one or start your own, and just try and do something. Now the fact that you know, Richard Spencer set the date and a place, and people come, that's great, man. American Renaissance is going to be in Tennessee, I think. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it to that one. But, like you said, different areas, Northeast, Texas, the Midwest, California, we gotta start, getting some type of scene going, instead of just us all sitting around on the internet.
Being uplifted, right?
What's that?
Yeah, you sit around on the internet, being isolated and
negative.
In your own little bubble. Yeah.
Yeah, in your own little bubble, man, and I think that's one of the reasons why you get so much of this infighting, really, because I think people are really not even living in reality. They're like so, their world, their version of the movement is just criticizing every little, nook and cranny, every tiny little detail of something, as if any of that really matters.
Things tend to fracture pretty quickly,
Yeah, I mean,
people aren't that strident if they're dealing with other people in person. That's one of the positive things about having a live meeting is people are just they're quicker to go negative and when they're kind of anonymous or under whatever name on the internet, and things just don't get that nasty that quickly. When you're dealing with people face to face, you tend to kind of react to each other, and try, especially if you're part of the same movement, try to build a consensus. And positive for so many reasons.
There's a logic to it. Look at it this way. I mean, when you're in person, right? It's a whole different dynamic. When you're by yourself and you're talking to a computer screen, it's you and the computer screen. There is no human, interaction there. So there's no etiquette. There's no courtesy. There's no empathy for the other person's feelings, what they're thinking.
Oh, you don't have to look at someone's face and see them reacting to what you're saying or, you don't worry about hurting anyone's feelings or...
Right,
and
guess what? You can be a tough guy. You can be a tough guy, and we know there's a lot of assholes in this movement. I'm sorry. There's a shitload of assholes for some reason. It's very unfortunate, but, people that like to belittle people or for whatever reason, pick up on people's flaws and character traits that's not up to their standards, I mean, a lot of hypocrisy and self-deception, I think. And, people really are, especially, from people that are professed Christians, too. I find that to be real funny because it's like here's their whole philosophy of, not judging other people, lest thee be judged, type thing. And what do they do?
There's no one who doesn't judge people. There's just people who say they don't judge people, and they're usually the worst.
Right. I mean, but it's less hypocritical when, that's not your whole religious creed. I'm going to go back. I'm going to keep you on. I'm going to look at the call board. I saw a couple other callers. I'm going to just pull everybody up so I don't have to run back and forth between rooms. Give me one sec. Okay, we have a 205 and a 424, I believe. 205, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Jeb, calling from Birmingham.
Oh, great, Jeb. All right, solid guy. Don't have to worry about Jeb. 424, what's your name? Where are you calling from? I just wanted to get a head count here. 424, are you there? Hello? All right, well, I clicked everybody on. So we've got Jeb and we have the individual from Texas. Now, as we were saying, the third person is on if they want to speak. As I was saying, people can be internet tough guys when, they don't have to face someone in person, and empathy is one thing. The other thing is, you don't go out of your way to attack somebody when you're looking right at them. it's just another part of the equation, you know, is sizing somebody up. And, you know, I find, you know, that's the real world is when you're right there versus, you know, being by yourself. You cannot fight a movement, run a movement, be part of a movement, a struggle, whatever you want to call it, by yourself in isolation. So we are social creatures, social animals, whatever, you know, Aristotle said. And, you know, this is it, man. This is how we move forward. You know, we start to you know, get together in person and show that there's a consensus, that there is, you know, a sense of something real and tangible out there, that, you know, people really give a crap about the preservation of their race and their culture, and they're pissed off just at the whole, you know, direction that things have gone. So anything you guys want to say or ask or add to, I'm going to just let you guys jump in.
Well, I was going to say, too, you know, in terms of, you know, fracturing and kind of infighting, I think that's also kind of a special problem with our movement, you know, beyond just the internet thing. And it's just because, I mean, look, if we were all followers, we wouldn't have shaken off the programming. We'd all just be liberals, right? So, I mean, to kind of arrive at this place, you have to be kind of an independent thinker. So it gets to be like herding cats, you know. You know, we've kind of thought things through for ourselves, and it can be hard to change people's mind. It can be hard to kind of knock them off of their, you know, one single track that they're in. So, you know, consensus building is something that has to be kind of worked toward, and, you know, that just needs to be kept in mind that, you know, individually it's hard to accomplish anything, and, you know, we need to start to kind of find some common ground and pool our resources and go forward.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you look at, you know, what is it that gives something power and magnification? You look at our enemies and, you know, these groups that form all these various think tanks and, you know, special interests, lobbyists, you know, who, you see them on C-SPAN, you know, they don't have any more people than what I saw in that room, yet the camera's on them and it's going out onto people's television screens, you know. But guess what? Our camera is going out into the internet. And, you know, I mean, that the internet is our weapon. But, you know, the other thing is just showing people that, you know, there are a group of European descended folks that are not happy with what's been done to their nations. You know, so the fact of getting the awareness out there that, yeah, there are white nationalists. No, they don't want to exterminate all other races. They're not white supremacists in the sense that they want to, you know, make non-whites their slaves. You know, I mean, all this ridiculous Jewish, you know, propaganda that is out there is, you know, has to be dealt with. And there were some positive signs, even in anomalies of seeing some non-whites, you know, kind of say things. I just ran into some, I don't know, some black conservative commentator that wrote some article about the left's war on white America. You know, I had a bookmark for this. You know, I'm sure someone knows about it, but, you know, I just saw this on Facebook the other day. And, you know, I mean, I think, you know, this is starting to get out there, this concept that of just forcing people to have to accept this program of whatever you want to call it. So you guys, I mean, what do you guys think of ideas of, you know, what can be done? Because, I mean, other than, you know, it's one thing to sit and talk on the internet. It's another thing to sit and talk in person. Now, you're still just talking. Nothing is actually being accomplished. But I think something is being different there. You know, there's a distinction between talking on the internet versus talking in person. Because now you've got people, you know, operating as a tribe, literally, you know, operating as a group. You know, and the ideas, this is an intellectual battlefield right now. So I don't know, any thoughts, any questions about the night to try to jog my memory?
Well, in my experience, or what I've noticed over the few years that I've been involved in white nationalism, it seems to me that we all agree that white people are worth preserving. But where we fracture is in how to go about it. And we have so many people that think, you know, my way is the correct way, and whoever doesn't agree with me is a shill, a Jew, or a troll. And, you know, so many organizations have been destroyed because of that. You got people that are pretty much like, you know, I'm going to take my toys and go home. And, you know, we pretty much have to go back to basics. And in that, what do we agree on? Well, if we agree that we deserve our own homeland, and we agree that we deserve to exist simply because we do exist, then that needs to be the focus of what we do. And if you stick to that idea, whenever you put forth that idea, it doesn't have to take a lot of us. I mean, you just look at this fellow here in Birmingham. That he put up two billboards, or he or she, you know, or maybe it was a group of, I don't know. They put up two billboards. One of them, the last one, only stayed up like 2 or 3 days, and then it came down. But it made national headlines, you know. So just the idea that white people should exist is such an explosive idea. Just a few dedicated people that are willing to get out there and just get that message out there is going to grab a lot of media attention. And I think that, you know, you have certain groups now that one of the first groups that I saw getting out there on the streets and protesting that actually made any headway is the League of the South. And, of course, I am a member, and I'm a little biased. You know, I do agree with their message, and I agree with their tactics. But because they have staged several, I think they're up to 12, a dozen protests on the street now in the past 2 years, then we have seen other groups say, well, you know what, these people were able to go out on the street, they were not attacked violently, they didn't lose their jobs, they got good publicity, they presented a clean image, and so that kind of emboldens other people to say, hey, you know what, we can get out here and do the same thing, you know. And I think that's what's the old saying, success breeds success. So
yeah,
I believe that, you know, I'm heartened by it. Matter of fact, you know, I didn't even know about the NPI thing going on today until I read about it just, I don't know, a couple of hours ago on Facebook. And I mean, not Facebook, Stormfront. Anyway, which, hell, I get it confused. They're about the same damn thing. Anyway, I read about it, and I thought, well, hell, that would have been interesting if I had the funds to go to it. But y'all have all heard of Matthew Heimbach and his organization.
Yeah,
Brad,
yeah. Well, Jed, before you even go any further, you know, I contacted my friend who goes by Ed in, you know, in New York City. I had him on. And, you know, I asked him if he wanted to come, and, you know, he couldn't come for whatever reason. But then he said, guess what, I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow, the day after the National Policy Institute, to protest CPAC or whatever the Republican thing is. I guess Matthew Heimbach was doing something there, right?
That's what I was getting at, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Matthew Heimbach and his organization, Trad Youth, got together with a few members of the League of the South, and they were protesting CPAC. And so far, they've had several interviews with the media. I haven't read any of the articles that may or may not have been written up about it. But the Southern Nationalist websites, Office of Dylan Lucent and SouthernNationalist.com, and even the League of the South.com, have posted dozens and dozens of pictures. And from what I see from the pictures, you know, they were engaging the public and speaking with people, and they were all, of course, well-dressed, you know, bundled up for the cold. But yeah, I mean, hell, it can be done. I mean, just get out there and do it. You know, you don't have to march down the street, you know, goose stepping, and you don't have to, you know, throw your entire ideology at the first person you meet. You can just make a simple point. Hey, we are a people and we deserve to exist. That's not the current paradigm. We will not exist. So, you know, just stick to your basic points and put it out there. And eventually, you know, that's one of the problems that a lot of our people have, is like we have a complete and total ideology, you know, and we want to throw this whole ideology at people at one time. And it's overwhelming for the uninitiated. You know, I wasn't a complete radical, you know, when I first got into white nationalism. But the more I learned, the more quote-unquote radicalized I became. And so my focus is just really now just to get people, just get my foot in the door, you know, like here.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
we deserve
honest,
to exist, you know.
Jeb, I think we got too much ideology. I'm sorry, man. I think all the ideology we need is already there. You know, I mean, all the books that we could ever need are already there. I mean, how many times are we going to say the same thing over and over again? You know, it's just like these history books. You know, I mean, it's one thing where, you know, you discover something new, you know, revisionism, something changes that wasn't previously known. That's one thing. But, you know, when you have the same book saying the same facts, just, you know, in a different way or a different order or different style, you know, I mean, there's so much of that. You know, now let's just stick to the basics. Let's just simplify things for folks. And what you said about the ontological proof of, you know, why we deserve to exist here. You know, the fact is we don't have to justify it in any way. And that's what people miss. It's like, look, the system that's been created right now has been designed to kill us, to destroy us. And, you know, this is what we are at war with. And, you know, we don't need to say, oh, we deserve to survive because we're the most beautiful people or because of our accomplishments or our intelligence or our cultural achievements. No, look, I mean, we deserve to survive because we want to survive, and that's it. That's it. We love our people. We love ourselves, and we don't really need any further, you know, proof than that. Now, all the things that you know, go into it, yeah, that's all very important, but I think people miss, you know, when you talk about, you know, they get caught up, they lose the philosophical, you know, reason to exist, raison d'être, I think, in French or whatever, something like that. It's like you say, you know, just get it back to the basics. And, you know, multiculturalism, diversity, basically now, it's like, what do they say? They don't say, hey, if you want to live with your own kind and you're white, fine. But you can't stop people from mixing. That's not what is said. What is said now is if you want to live with your own kind and you're white, you're a criminal. You're racist. You have no right to do that. And therefore, you know, that is what is going to lead to our extinction. You know, so at some point they have to admit that they are not going to allow us, because the way they define racist is, you know, we can't have any all white or, you know, European lands that are specifically for us now. We have to allow everybody else into those territories. Other races don't have to do the same thing. They are allowed to remain a majority in their countries. You know, just like the Jews want to be in Israel. So, I mean, they have to. You get them to admit that, and that's it. Now they're the perpetrator. Now they're the white genocider. So, yeah.
That's exactly right. You put the onus on them. You know, because I mean, even like I speak with a lot of people about my beliefs. You know, I'm fairly open. But I was talking with an individual that happens to be married to a black woman, and he has a couple of mixed kids. And finally, he gets exasperated, and he said, "So what do you have against my kids?" And I was like, "Nothing, man. You know, I'm not telling you that you can't go out and have mixed kids. you're just telling me that I can't have white grandkids. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, I mean, you know, I'm not telling you that you can't take your kid to the black barbershop. You're telling me that my grandchild can't go to the same barbershop I go to. You know, I mean, it's just simple, you know.
Yeah, and that is what Horace points out, I think, with his whole, you know, white versus anti-white thing as a starting base. Now, you know, I think there's a lot of nuances and, you know, a lot of different... I don't know what the word is there. Nuance, I guess, is the best word I can think of, or caveats. But, you know, yeah, that's a good starting point, too. I mean, just to understand who you're talking to, size them up, what's their angle here? You know, if they really believe that you're a criminal in the eyes of modern society, if you believe that your genetics and DNA and, you know, who you are has a right to reproduce itself in its original form without being hybridized or bastardized or polluted by other populations. You know, if you're a person that believes that, then you are going along with this anti-white worldview. If you're misguided enough to believe, like the Jewish media, that, you know, we hate others because we want to preserve ourselves, if you're that stupid, you know, I'm sorry. I mean, what can we do for these people? But yeah, Texas out there, you know, if you want to jump in too, you know, feel free. I'm gonna go check on the board too, see if we got anyone else. But go ahead, guys.
Yeah, it's important to note, for the most part, you know, like you said, we have all the facts we need, and it's good to have that on board, but facts don't convince people. Facts don't convert people. You have to strike that right emotional chord. You know, I mean, that's what, you know, wins hearts and minds. It's stories. It's, you know, having the right image out there, and eventually that's going to have to come. And then, you know, once someone's mind is open, you know, that's when the facts come in.
Well, that's exactly right. Like I was saying, you know, get your foot in the door. And, you know, a lot of times the hardest thing to do is just to shut up. Just make your point and leave. You know what I mean? You know, like, hey, we deserve to exist right now. If the trends continue, we will cease to exist in the foreseeable future. And then if somebody, like, a lot of times, you know, they'll agree with us. And then we want to go into, well, yeah, well, you know, the North was wrong about the Civil War, you know. Slave owners did not rape their slaves, you know, or the Nazis weren't as bad as people tell you, and blah, blah, blah.
It can't be all at once. You've got to spoon feed people sometimes, for sure, and kind of know who you are, too.
Right, and let them come to those conclusions on their own. You know what I mean? And personally, you know, I enjoy history. I enjoy learning about history. But I've realized that I can't push my view on history on other people. And now I'm up to the point where, you know, if somebody wants to speak with me about history, and I'll speak to them on equals, like if you and I were having a conversation, I'd speak with you about history and all that. But I'm not just going to run out and just grab the first person I see and go to talk about the intricacies of the founding of the nation and all this and that. I'm just going to point out.
They've already got their own picture in their head about, you know, all those situations. And
that's right.
Or knock that right out of their head, you know, just right off the bat.
Hey, guys, you know, we got a few other callers. I'm going to leave Jeff in Texas on. We've got a 386. 386, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. Love the show. This is Mark from Virginia. I do agree a lot with what you guys are saying there, and, you know, you're talking about talking history with people and stuff. I normally let them kind of guide the path of the conversation, and you guys, I have to admit, I've been kind of shocked at, you know, like the people who actually kind of respond the best. Some of the, now don't get me wrong, it's not completely, you know, saving the race, but just maybe pointing out the Jews a little bit. I have a couple people who are friends of mine who are actually Obama supporters, And I've actually have turned a couple of their heads just as simple as, yeah, you notice the news loved Obama right up until he didn't go into Syria. And all of a sudden, he's the worst SOB that everybody's ever heard of, right? Everybody loved him, and everything was cool. And as soon as he just stops bombing for the real people in charge, he's an SOB, right? And I have to admit, I think even Horace has talked about maybe it's going to come from the left more than the right, which is just really, you know, not – it's hard to wrap your head around that. But those are the people who get the time to go out and lock arms and protest, I guess, you know. But, yeah, I have to admit, pretty good reactions from some people I did not expect it from at all. What do you guys think about that?
Foreign policy-wise, I think is a good opportunity to prove to people that it's not so much a left-wing media as a Jewish media. And I think, you know, wars in the Middle East and liberals wondering where's the war protest and where's our you know, liberal media? Why is everyone just on board with attacking Iraq? And it's pretty easy to explain. So there are opportunities from the left side too. And especially it seems that, you know, people on the left, they just want to, you know, be good people. That's what those beliefs are all about. They're willing to hate themselves just to prove what excellent people they are. So, you know, if they can get in a different social circumstance and as soon as we start to pick up numbers where they're comfortable feeling like they're part of that group, I think, yeah, there's a lot of conversion that's possible there.
Yeah, you're talking about that snobby liberal attitude of, you know, uppityness. I mean, it's totally, man. Did you say Jeff in Virginia? Mark, I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, you're right, man. This is what we got to remain. We got to remain focused. That this left-right divide is total nonsense. I mean, it is constructed to divide us as white people. I really believe that. They play on. You know, it's like they have something out there for everyone. You know, for the folks that are more altruistic. You know, they've got the left there. And, you know, we know how suicidal and destructive, you know, all those attitudes and ideas are. But on the other hand, I think a lot of the left comes from a genuine place of humility, of love, trying, you know, it's do-gooderness. But, I mean, those aren't necessarily bad things if they're applied to our own race and to our own people, you know, versus, like, selfishness and greed and that type of thing when you get, like, these Ayn Rand libertarian. So, I mean, I think really we should not exclude anybody. If you're on the path of the truth, that's really all that matters. And Jeb, you know, said something before about we live in a sick world now where if you believe white people have a right to exist, you're actually, you know, a thought criminal. And that's how far we've gone now. So it's a subversive and revolutionary act to just say white people, Europeans, have a right to survive, you know, for reasons X, Y, and Z. And, you know, the other subversive act is to just admit the truth that, you know, there is a Jewish agenda and program here that has targeted our people. You know, and that's really it. It's those two things. And what do we do about them? Go ahead, guys. There's a 6-1 on it. There's a 6-6-1 and a 4-2-4. If everyone can take a turn and just jump in, you know, at will, we'll have like a crosstalk. I don't know, 6-6-1 or 4-2-4. 6-6-1, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Is this North Bell?
Yeah. I was listening to you guys. I don't go along with that. We have a right to exist. I mean, to me, that's defeatist. You know, I'm going to exist no matter what, you know. And but we got so much work to do. But I find that every time I talk to people, if I don't see them for a long time, that media grabs them again and puts doubts in their mind and puts these weird ideas in their mind. And then they come back, and it's a repeat process. And I honestly believe until we get some kind of media distribution platform, it's going to be really hard to reinforce our message once we have them, once we have their attention. And a lot of people are getting slapped in the face now, especially economically, and it's a good time to grab them.
Well, see, that's the reason why I think that meme or that idea works best is because that is the idea that the media pushes about every other group of people. And if you say, well, if they have that right, then we also have that right, that's something
Absolutely.
That'll stick with them even if you're not around.
I mean, I understand what North Powell is saying. You know, from our perspective, you know, going around crying, saying we have a right to exist. I mean, I believe in, you know, the strong survive thing, you know, and might is right. I mean, I am a Darwinist to some extent, and I think that, you know, if you're a people that is so suicidal and self-destructive, you know, that's why we get negative. But we're not like that. And, you know, I mean, you know we have a problem within our own race here when it comes to that. But, you know, getting other people who have fallen astray, the lost sheep, you know, the flock or whatever, I mean, what Jeb just said, I mean, I think that is, you know, just trying to apply the standard that's given universally for everybody else, but for some reason not us, you know.
Well, you mentioned Darwinism. Well, see, you know, and the, you boil it down to the strong survive, or there's, but really it's the survival of the fittest, which creature was able to adapt to their environment the most successfully. Well, you got to realize what environment you're in now. We're in a quote-unquote leftist-controlled environment, and that's
awesome.
Based on this love and, you know, and hope and all this other BS. So you have to adapt to that environment. And that
environment.
Yeah,
but it's not on love. It's not on love. It's on hate. It's really on hate.
They don't package it on hate. They wrap it in love.
Well, look, if these people have a right to survive, it seems that their only reason, that the only way that they can survive is in white nations. You know, like, it doesn't jive, you know. But their message is really hate. They hate everything that this country stands for, that every white country stands for, and every white country is built. So really, their message is hate.
I think his point is no one thinks of himself in that vein. No, there's no movement built on people who think of themselves as.
Well, that's also what white countries used to stand for. What do we stand for now? We stand for diversity and all this other stuff. You know what I mean? They have taken over that.
White countries stand ostensibly now, or vocally, what they package it in, is making the world a better place for all people. But what they in reality do is destroy white people. So if they're trying to make it a better place for all people, why does that not include white people?
Exactly. I think it's a beginner level thing when you're talking to an initiate, you know, that's at ground, you know, level, you know, first grade, kindergarten. I mean, we're talking about children here. I mean, you know, these people are so brainwashed and programmed. You know, you got to find a hook into their consciousness, and you got to play on the very memes and, you know, ideas that they've been pumped with, and try and apply it to our struggle, you know, and just show. I mean, how come these guys get this, but we don't get this? And, you know, this is our own country. We built this country. You know, these lands.
Ultimately, that's what it is. It's really that we have a right to this country. And it's our country, and a nation is a culture. And if we have, you know, three races, three cultures, then we should have three nations, you know. And this was, for the most part, white nation and a white culture. And changing that is just obviously changing and really taking over the country. And it's ours. So,
well, most people only considered about their self-interest, right? And the country moves in the self-interest of the people in charge. So, you know, I approach some of these minorities is that, they're getting you over here to be consumers, you know? And that's basically what it is. They just want to fill in more consumers.
Well, you said
they're not going to – these minorities, though, that are coming out of Africa are not going to look at being a consumer in America as a bad thing, because they're really living a better life than they were in Africa.
And hey, by the way, the best black people you'll ever meet are fresh off the boat from Africa. It's the ones that have been here for a couple of generations that are, you know, having the chip on their shoulder and, you know, you know, they're walking into the room racist from the get-go, or anti-white, I guess, from the get-go. A real African person, if you actually ever worked with one of them or, you know, anything else, they're lovely people to be around. It's the American blacks that are, you know, intolerable from time to time.
They hate American blacks. They hate them. I used to have to stop them, you know, when I was a supervisor, I have to stop these guys from fighting with one another all the time. They hate them because they consider them lazy and bums.
They are, yeah. Exactly. They're real people. They're real people from Africa.
But
and
now,
they actually like us, you know, they understand what we're giving them.
Yeah, but we've drained the cream of the crop from so many countries that now we're getting the bottom of the barrel coming in, you know, which really makes for a bad mix.
Well, the thing is, you know, an individual black person can be a good, an individual black person, individual Mexican, individual Asian, it can be fine. It's when you get large groups of them together, it forcefully injected into our society when we have, that's when you have the conditions for genocide. That's the thing.
If we're 98% white, I don't care who else is here. I don't care who the, you know, the 2% of, you know, 50 different groups. It's just when you have these large groups, just like you're saying, now you have a cultural battle. Now you don't have assimilation. Now you just have a clash between cultures.
Absolutely.
I don't see why anyone should believe that their culture shouldn't win, especially in our case, since we're the culture that created the nation. And why should we give it away?
You know, that's the thing. Somebody said it. Like, race is this, race is that. It's like, well, what about these non-white racists that hate white people? I mean, basically, look, we're all in a struggle here. Everybody is going to support their own kind if you're a normal, healthy individual. And, you know, it's only white people that have been, you know, given this bill of goods where, you know, for some reason, you know, they have to uplift the rest of humanity. You know, and I think there's many different causes of this, but look, this is just where it is now. Non-whites are very racialist. They're taught that.
They don't have to be taught that.
That's natural. That's natural to everyone. We've been taught not to be like that.
No,
we've been taught not to be like that. But everyone naturally is like that. They are for their own culture.
Culture, but we're talking about hating the white people, okay? When I was younger and when I traveled around the world there, I got a lot of respect, and I know it was just for being a white man, okay, because they thought highly, you know, like you knew things and things like this. They're being taught this hate. We're not talking about, they want to stick together in their own culture and all that kind of stuff. We're talking about actual hate, this hate that want to kill us and kill us with hammers and all this kind of stuff. This was taught to them.
Well, because they're large enough, now they see that as a possibility. You know, if you're 0.004% of the population, that's not even worth thinking about. But if you're, you know, taking over California, then you might as well be La Raza and start attacking people and say,
"Hey, this is why we're going to take this place." I'm sorry, if you're a racist.
If all the white people stuck together, we have enough to wipe anybody out right now, okay? It's, you know, they're just separating everybody up, separating all the groups.
That's why it's an important time, because it is going to reach a point where it gets too late, but you're right. I mean, you're right now, we have the capability to stop and reverse everything that is going on.
Well, that's why they push the interracial shit so much, is because if white people did do that, we would throw them all out. But now you have so many families that have, you know, the half Mexican cousin or the half black niece or something like that. And they're like, well, not all black people are bad. You know, that's part of my family and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah. You know, this is a big thing. Self-interest, right on, man. You know, I think that, you know, the mixing really, I think it's overblown how much is really going on. I think it's because of, you know, the Jewish Hollywood setup. They want to create this false reality. But, you know, of course, there's a lot more mixing today than there ever was in the past. But you said it. I mean, as families have, you know, my family reunion has non-whites in it on my Italian side. Okay, so now, you know, this becomes an issue now, because it's not, you know, now it's definitional. Now, what defines the family? If you believe it's blood, then, you know, I mean, these people, they married into your family, and now, you know, it's like, yeah, they may be great people, but do you really consider them part of your family? So this is the thing, is you know, this is going to get complicated, because, you know, people want to be good people. I think white people are very, you know, they're very noble in the way that they want to help everybody. And, you know, it's now they got to look after themselves, really. That's what it comes down to. So.
Yeah, but isn't that really racist? Isn't that really racist that these white people want to go around and tell these other people how to live and what's good and what a society should be like and everything like that? These races have survived and got along just fine without us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. I mean, in North Pal, too, I wanted to mention, when you said you went around the world and you got respect, I talked to this Mexican girl, and she brought up the point that in Mexico or in some South American countries, the mestizos there actually look up to their pure white population over there, whereas, you know, maybe it's because there's less Jewish influence, I don't know what, but, you know, as opposed to over here, she commented, in America, the minorities are really taught to, you know, hate us, you know, and that's, I think, that Jewish part of the equation. But,
yeah, that's,
you know,
the media and the education. That's what we've lost. That's what we got to kind of get back. We got to get that edge back. It's that communication lines to the people. You know, these aren't a bunch of Jews around there whispering in people's ears. I mean, they're reaching them on mass communication and through the education system. And because we have given it to them, they've got control over it. You know, like I keep saying, how many white nationals are in a city council, a mayor, on a school board, or any of this kind of stuff? And then we sit and wonder, why? How is this all happening? How did they get so much control? Because we let them have it.
Well, you know, you're right in that. And, you know, running for something like school board, that's fairly simple. I mean, you can win a school board election with as little as like 80 votes, you know. And that's something that a lot of people have really just dropped the ball on. You know, I personally don't have the time to run for school board, but I participate in PTA meetings all the time.
Yeah, I was talking with this guy. We went around the internet, and I told him, I said, you go to any Cal town, and there'll be a Jew in the council or on the school board. And he said, no, not in this place in New York. I forget the name of the town it was. And we went looking in through the pages there. Sure enough, they're on the school board. See? And, and in all white, and in an all white community, I mean, that's sick. That's sad. These people talk about, we want to form white communities. Well, you got to be able to run it. You got to be able to put in the government and choose your own police force and all this stuff. This is what we haven't been doing.
Well, I think it's gonna take some public figures to finally grow a pair, you know. And when they're questioned about, you know, when someone finds out that they have racialist ties, you know, stop apologizing and own up to it and say, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, and what of it? You know, I mean, that's it. That's all you got to do. I mean, jeez.
Well, you know, I think
all you got, a lot of these guys, they just want to run for state, for government office, or for the federal government or anything like that, and there's a lot more to it. You know, you got to start right from the get-go. You got to start in the community. You got to do things. You got to be well-known in the community. Get into the community level. Get into that part of the government, and then push up from there. So then when anybody says anything bad about you, they'll say, well, yeah, he might feel that way, but he does a good job for us.
Well, you know, I think the dam may be about to break on that, too. I mean, it might not be this year, this election cycle, but Mo Brooks, a representative from North Alabama, last year was talking about a war on whites and did not back down from the comment. Jim Webb, a senator from West Virginia.
Yes.
He was talking about how the white working class has been abandoned by both the Republicans and the Democrats. And,
good one, Jeff.
You know,
I saw that on TV. Good one. They were actually talking about Hillary. He might be able to take Hillary out to run for president because of that. Yeah, he's from Virginia. Jim Webb is just on the border there. He's not going over any lines, but absolutely, he is saying exactly what you said, sticking up for white working class, which I haven't heard almost in my lifetime, honestly.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that these guys saw a lot more support from us, you know, especially in the vote. People said, don't vote. You have to vote, because if we show them the support, that is the backbone they're going to get. Because if we're not going to support them, they got to go to, you know, the jurisdiction that is going to support them, right? Because that's how they're going to get the money.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And the Republicans have that support, and as soon as they're elected, they run from it. So, I mean, you know, that's going to wear thin eventually. And, yeah, what do you guys think about any third party? I know the American Freedom Party isn't really taken off, but everybody loves, you know, Dr. McDonald. What you know, do you see anything there in the, you know, a 10-year frame or something like this where we could get some percentages going with that party?
No, not really. Hell, the largest third party in America is the Libertarian Party, and they haven't done shit in 40 years.
Yeah, but
you know, when
you
got a party that
candidate gets, like Perot.
But when you got a party that gets some kind
of
support,
he ran independent.
He ran independent.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? He's just not a party, I guess. Third party. He's just an independent. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, he ran with his own money.
I see what you're saying. Okay. So maybe it is just.
Well, I mean, this is a good question. I think you guys, maybe we can just go around on this. Because it seems like there's really one of two options: either infiltrate one of the two major parties, or both, or go, or just break away and just declare they're both hopelessly lost and too far gone, and we got to go third party, or you know, just sit around and wait for the collapse. I mean, really, what else can we do other than waiting for bullets to fly? Really, I mean, because that's it.
I think it's third party or collapse myself.
I think it's a combination.
I think the largest shakeup that we've seen in our lifetime has been, well, Ross Perot, and then second largest would have been Ron Paul. You know, he put together a pretty big coalition of both Republicans and Democrats and independents, especially amongst young voters. And but he got shot down in the media, and that screwed him.
Yeah, he actually won the Iowa caucus, if you go and check it out. They didn't say that till after it was all wrapped up. But, yeah, Ron Paul was awesome.
Yeah,
he
but
won
the money.
Number,
the
he
money,
won a number of them. I mean.
The money and the power, the money and the power is in your state politics. You go look at the budgets of your state politics. That's where the money goes. There's more money getting ripped off from you than the federal government rips off from you. And as far as a collapse, you've got a government that prints it. You know, federal bank that prints a sovereign currency, I can't see how it'll collapse. It just, we might get bread in the store on the shelves at $100 a pop.
Well, that's the point, is the power's overseas now. As soon as they cash in their dollars, that's it, is my understanding, right? So, yeah, if it was up to D.C., they'd let it go forever. But if it's up to Moscow,
those dollars go back into our bonds, is where those dollars go back, okay? Because that's all they can buy with it.
Those are interest-bearing bonds, though. And it always
takes
more dollars to buy them back than what you sold.
Well, you got Japan with a 400% over GDP, but they can still print their money because what are you going to do with the yen? Once you go to exchange it on a currency exchange, you lose money. So the only way you do is reinvest it back into their bonds.
But to say that a fiat currency cannot collapse is really false. I mean, we saw it with the Weimar Republic in Germany. I mean, that fiat currency absolutely collapsed.
It depends on what the international community decides to take it or not, basically.
Right.
Well,
what happens when Russia and China decides to start buying and trading oil in the yuan instead of the dollar?
I think they already have.
Well, yeah, and we don't have the military might to force them.
All we got to do is stop buying their products and they'll collapse. Okay, this is a global system now, man. It's a lot different than 50 years ago.
What happens when the American government tells the American people they can no longer buy a T-shirt for $3? They got to pay $15 for it. That's not going to happen. What happens when they tell GM that they can't buy alternators from Changhua? You know.
We're no longer a manufacturing society. We're not set up. We're not a people that makes things anymore to a very large extent, which was an incredibly stupid thing to do. So, you know, it would take time to get back to a place where we can, you know, have high tariffs and protect our labor force from, you know, cheap foreign labor and cheap foreign goods.
I mean, guys, I don't know what you all think, but I get the sense of, you know, with my own self, that one of the problems with our struggle or movement today is it just seems like, you know, the task at hand is so Herculean. It's just so monumentally impossible, it seems, that without just, you know, drastic environmental changes happening that shift the balance and present opportunities where they don't exist now, we really can't make any headway. Anything you do is kind of futile. So that's kind of what puts us in that paralysis. It just seems like, you know, without things really, you know, just changing the dynamics, the role of the dice, you know, we're just waiting right now. We're in this period where we really can't. It's so frustrating because what can we do? It seems like we can't do anything.
I think that's,
you know,
that's dangerous. I think that's dangerous to just sit around and wait. You got to get in there and you got to work. You got to do the things that are necessary. And then when another paradigm shift hits, you know, you got to catch on to that curve and take advantage of it. You know, look what happened with the internet. It's just that we weren't organized to really take good advantage of it, although we can now. Okay,
well, I don't
as far
know. I mean, Stormfront was out there right when it came out. You know,
yeah, what difference has it made?
Well, I think we've used the internet. The question is, you know, where has it gotten us?
We haven't used the internet. How we use
the
internet?
How many websites are out there that tell the truth about, you know, that are our people? I mean, there's tons of them, I think, you know.
Forget about that. Go to any comment section on any mainstream website, and
absolutely,
you're going to hear and see our ideas.
Exactly.
Right,
the internet is huge. It's been the best thing that's happened to us in the longest time.
So the people are waking up.
If we had
the question is how do we use that energy? How do we channel that to something that's tangible?
If we had a proper distribution platform that could compete with these high-powered, you know, all the cable companies, all the media companies are getting into the internet. You know, if we had a media platform to compete with them, we'd be right up with them. We'd be the alternative to come see instead of having to go find all these little places, you know, in the corners of the internet, you know. And
I don't think that's easier than going online and finding what's out there right now. I don't see how you think we'd be able to compete in that fashion. I mean, just look at the numbers. You think it'd be easier if you had to download something separate or set up something separate on your computer and set up something separate on your smart TV? I mean, we have to have the numbers to power something like that. I think if you launched it today.
Well, how many white nationalists do you think there are in the United States?
I think there's more and more every day. Is what I would say.
I think there's tens of thousands of hardcore white nationalists, and then you've got millions that sympathize with our views. They just don't know all the facts.
Well,
yeah,
we
really
a good proposition.
Identify
as, we gave
as,
a good
as nationalists, not a whole lot.
Do we really want
proposition?
All right, one at a time.
Really
guys.
Well, let me just make this point, and then I'll be quiet for a second. Do we really want to compete with the mainstream media when they continually discredit themselves each and every day? 80%
okay,
of people 40 and younger do not get their news from the mainstream media.
Hey, guys, also I do want to say that we might be able to just claim a victory right now. I mean, they're coming out with this net neutrality. We might, you know what I mean? They might be seeing exactly what you guys are explaining right now is we do have our
That's
own media.
That's a Trojan horse.
The internet.
That's a Trojan horse. It's going to be run by the FCC.
No, they're going to try and shut everything down. It's part of the reason why I've called in tonight. I don't normally call in. They're probably going to shut all this down here soon. So it's time to start calling and talking to people. So, I think they are going to censor it. Yeah, you don't see anything cool on TV or the radio, right? The internet might be the future. That might be the future
of
the internet.
Okay, guys, what is net neutrality? Somebody define it for me. I mean, what is
it? I have
it?
No idea, but if you're putting federal regulation on something, it's going to get pretty tame pretty quick is what I would think.
Okay, say you're a communication company, and I'm a communication company. We each got, you know, our lines going across the nation, and I've got websites on mine. You've got websites on yours. When people come from my network into your network, we don't charge each other to traffic. Okay, it's called a peering agreement. and I accept your traffic, you accept my traffic. And what they were trying to do was to make premium bandwidth to certain sites, so they'd be able to slow certain ones down and speed other ones up.
And who's they? The companies like Google and Microsoft and all that, like.
Yeah, well, I mean, if the it would be the customers going to them and saying, you know, I want to pay for the, you know, premium service. They would open up premium services. So that's what it would be, all customer driven. So you would have, you know, all the big media companies in there. Like now, I mean, you got ABC and all these people on there. They got powerful systems there when they're in with the Amazon cloud servers and all that kind of stuff there, which is we can do also, okay? And so, but the thing is that, you know, if I go to their site and you go to their site, we're going to get the same response because, you know, it's still going over the same network. But if I
okay,
have,
so basically no one has a one-up on someone because they're paying more type of thing? It's not faster? You know, it's like a democratic thing where everybody's equal? I mean, is this what it is?
As far
like,
as the lines go, as far as the lines go, they might have more powerful servers and software and all this kind of stuff to deliver it better. But as far as over right to your computer over those lines, it's first come, first serve.
Has anybody ever had a problem with the speed of their computer lately? I mean, is this an issue at all, like in reality? I mean, they're sneaking
I don't think, right? Yeah, I don't get that. I mean, the guy that called in about net neutrality, what was your take on
it? Well, they've already got a network built already between the universities. I think it's called E3 or something like that, and it's 1,000 times faster. Years ago, the companies were paid, something like $50 million each state to put in these high-speed lines, and they went broke putting the lines in. So that's
Until it becomes a free speech issue, a First Amendment issue of that you know, now they can shut something down for hate speech. You know, does it really matter? I mean,
if the FCC's involved, they might, because now you get the government involved. You're talking about having IDs on everybody that goes onto the internet, so you know who they are and everything like that. You can't have any anonymity, okay? And yes, so will they have a situation where someone in Germany comes over here, and they'll be able to be tracked and then prosecute them over there? So, you know, there's lots of things they can do and tax the shit out of us.
Well,
it's
there's also
has been my whole lifetime.
It also eliminates startups as well. I mean, like if they start regulating it like they do the airways, you have to get a license to be able to even access it, you know, like a radio station.
Yeah, or a license for a website or something like that. So,
you know,
that's it can go anywhere that way. That's why we got to get in. Okay, that's why we got to be a big player in there. And like I was saying, how many white nationalists? You took all these white nationalists and gave them a proposition and said, this is what we're going to build, that you can put your kids in front of this and not have any Jew filth or anything like that, and say, look, one Jew cable bill that you pay for a month for the whole year, a membership, and now you're getting, you know, real money to really build a kick-ass media platform, and we just bombard it with the best of our best.
I mean, think of it this way: you got the black entertainment channel station, whatever. You know, having a white nationalist channel would be great. Would they allow?
Yeah, you don't even have to call it that.
Probably
you don't have to call it that. You give it something, you know, like European heritage or something like that.
Of course, right.
Don't scream about that too, but it's, you know, once you start talking about nationalists and everything else like that, now the government gets worried, eh? So,
yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, would we ever have the freedom to talk about what we're talking about now in the mainstream? I'm so controlled, you know. I don't think other than underground internet blogs and what we're doing right now, this is about as free as it gets. You know, beyond that, you know, Zog is enforcing their
restrictions. Well, you'd have to think. You'd have to think, you know, you want to put your best stuff out there. When somebody does a really good interview or something like that, you've got music. Kyle's making that movie. Imagine if he could have went to that platform and said, look, we're making this movie. We want to make a really good movie. You know, it'll cost you this X amount of money there. Then we start bringing talents together so we can have white companies being subcontractors, building up their own country. Companies and the platform buys the services from them, so we're building up an economic system, an independent economic system, because the platform is just be a management type thing, and then we have our people learning skills and keeping their skills, okay, and that's how you do it. Wait for something to happen, you know, we're going to wait. I've never had anything good waiting. I always had to go out and get what I wanted. And if you look at our heritage and our history, that's the type of people we are.
It goes back to what you're talking about, how many people self-identify. You need strong identifiers to do what you're talking about with an independent platform. And, yeah, you're talking millions in terms of people that believe that, you know, the Trayvon Martin case is bullshit or something like that. But that's not going to power network.
Hang on. Depends on what you've got an idea of what you're thinking of, that it's just this stuff. You know, you have stuff like homeschooling. You have stuff like how to repair your car. You know, like they have building the old house. You know, we just do it with our people. You're going to have the same people. They might just go to see that. Just a matter of getting them. It's a matter of time, people's time. And the more we can get them away from the Jew bullshit into our stuff, we're going to win the battle. That's how we're going to
I think the market is there. I just think it's cowardice. We don't have anybody who has money willing to fund us. You know, I mean that, and by us I don't mean Renegade. I just mean, a grand project or a platform like you're saying. You know, and that's the problem.
It's got to come from individual subscribers. Once you go looking for big money, they're going to want to control it. Okay.
Yeah, but
because
what I'm saying is, you know, there's big money on the enemy side. Where is the big money on our side? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I want to steer it. I just want to ask you guys, you know, okay, we had a meeting yesterday of, you know, so many people in person, and that was great. Now, how much did it accomplish? I don't know. But what I want to say is I think people just do your own thing, start a group, and just – get together and just go from there. I mean, with whatever projects you're going to do, I just encourage that. I mean, because the more white people are getting together in person, talking about these things, it presents, you know, an atmosphere that there is something going on. There's something happening. Yeah, we might not have thousands of people in the street right now, but, you know, ideas don't change overnight, you know, and I think like the internet is like a subconscious, you know, mind of the collective in a sense, you know, and when you see all these people on there thinking this way, we know we've got allies out there. The question is getting them to find each other and start to do something productive. So I just say form your group and just have a freaking meeting, you know, and see it grow, you know, and pull people towards
you know,
in your area.
There's a point to where you get so much of a mass of people, then they're looking for leadership, and then, you know, if you're not organized, you're going to have someone else.
Well, let's get there first.
Where they
let's get. Then we'll worry about the leadership.
I think there's enough people there. I think there's enough people there. Okay, just you know, there's a lot of people sitting on a fence and waiting. I think
Well, everybody's sitting on the fence and waiting because everyone's afraid to lose their job for being politically incorrect. Now, what we really need for any leadership is for somebody who's a baby boomer who's retired and wealthy enough they don't have a check coming in no more, and they have a conscience and they feel guilty they gave the country away. That person needs to step up and become a leader. The rest of us are trying to still feed people here. We can't be fired from our jobs. So it has to be somebody who's independently wealthy enough, even if it's just a retiree with a pension from somewhere that cannot take it from them. That's the people we need to step up. Everyone else is terrified to come out and open because they will be fired from their job or the podium apology or whatever. You know, we've all seen it every which way. You guys, that's really what it is. It's a generational thing. Somebody who's from the hippie generation needs to have some regret and stand up, and it almost would be better if they were a hardcore hippie.
Well, I got news for you. There was no hippie generation, okay? I don't know where you got that from. There was no hippie generation. Okay, that's on TV. There was no hippie generation, okay? Hippie, the baby boomers didn't, first vote came was for, and Nixon got elected. Okay, this was made from the generation before that, from the FDR generation. They were the guys in there making the bills. They were in the courts passing the federal laws. Okay, so
yeah,
you,
but
I think
you're
looking
at the
wrong direction.
He's talking about the
60s. Yeah,
I mean
the baby boomers have been in control.
We know there are other things that happened.
The baby boomers have been in control for quite some time, but let's never forget the first name that they were actually called. They were called the me generation because they were completely focused on themselves. They were really one of the most horrible generations that America ever produced.
They're not all dead yet. They're not all dead yet. Someone might step up and save this place still. So we'll see what happens.
3 million good white men had to go over there in the jungle and, you know, fight. So I don't think there are hippies. You know,
out of those 3 million, we only lost 58,000. And what does the rest of them do when they come home?
Right.
Well, I mean, it's not all about just bashing generational or anything like this. It's really, and when I say hippie generation, I guess it's just that ideology won out at that time frame moving forward. So, yeah, I know that every generation, hell, if I look around at mine, it's pretty disgraceful. So, you know, whatever they, baby boomer, whatever they end up calling me, you know, we're pretty disgraceful as well.
It,
we're handling it right now. So.
It was a class war. They came home, and the first thing what was happening was their jobs were getting shipped out, okay? By the middle and the upper middle class. They became the technicians that run the country today. They became the technicians. They went to
and
the few colleges.
Even more
but,
jobs.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
That was,
that's what they've been
the
doing.
Paradigm.
They took out, the yeah, they killed the working man, the blue collar. That's who had to fight that war, came back, we had the rust belts and all this other bullshit.
Yeah,
but,
I blame all the MBAs from Harvard and Yale business, you know, that bought into this economic free trade thing. I mean, it, you know, really, it's just the elite, you know, that structure, you know, the economics of the country, how you know, the working guy in the factory doesn't make the decision on whether or not it's going to be shipped over to China. So, I mean, I really do blame, you know, that class of people. I mean,
The bean counters. And
that's
they're
right.
The guys with the money, and they're not going to give us any money. I'm telling you right now, we got to dig it up ourselves.
You know, and
okay.
I, you know, people say, all right, this isn't real capitalism; it's crony capitalism, whatever name you want to attach to. The idea is putting money over blood, putting finance, you know, and just you know, self-interest and greed over your race. That's really what it comes down to, and this is why America, you know, has become what it is, I think,
and that's
is
a new phenomenon. That's a new phenomenon. We never were like that.
Well,
you know,
I don't know. I mean, to some extent, I think things have changed for the worse, but on the other hand, you know, there always was a plutocratic element to this country.
Definitely. You know. Right from George Washington, you know. Like we all know that. I mean, you know, bunch of smugglers and everything started their Revolutionary War. We all know that. But, you know, they're just the leaders. You know, it's the people that, you know, the mass of the people that really make the heart and soul of a nation, in spite of the leaders, okay? As long as the leaders can fill their belly, that's all they care about, okay? And so right now they figure that we're not a good bet because, you know, I was looking at a lot of marketing things about a year ago there, and they were talking about the worst guy to sell anything to that cost the most money to get a sale out of was the white male. So the white male is not a good consumer, so he's on the bottom of the list.
Depends
in their
on what you're selling.
Texas, go ahead. Do you want to jump in?
I mean, it depends on what you're selling, I guess. Because it's who has the money. It becomes harder to reach, harder to convince. You know, the white population is aging.
Well, it's harder. Older white women control $7 trillion right now in wealth of this nation. And women are in on 85% of consumer decisions, consumer buying. So, and you see,
well, I think women definitely. I think women have more power than they ever had in the past. You know, and that's you know, the thing is, our race has been divided. You know, every which possible way that they could figure out. And that's a big one right there, you know, and it's a topic within the struggle. Last night at the National Policy Institute, I would say the ratio of men to women was probably seven, you know, out of 10 people, seven were men or more or eight, you know. So, I mean, it's that exists now. You know, what do we do about it? Does anything need to be done about it? I mean, it's that's a topic in and of itself. I think we need to use every available resource that we have at our disposal. That's what it comes down to. It's are you effective or not? You know, and that's it. Quality people.
Well, you. Yeah,
women won't be in until it's popular. It's going to be a male thing until it's a mass movement, and then women will get in. They're on the ground level of anything, because, you know, they're just more social creatures. They're not willing to be as autonomous for the most part. So it's going to be men until you reach a certain water point, but then it breaks and everything flows together. We're, you know, just not there yet.
Yeah, well, they're not as confrontational. Plus, they're women, most women are really Marxist. They've been hit the hardest. So, you know, they're going to be the last to come out.
And on that note, by the way, gentlemen, that's where we need to push it home. We are about fairness. We are about right, being fair. That's what they're about, too. That's what they think they're about. But they're just, you know, leaving out a big segment of this population for equality here. So, yeah, those are our ideals, and, you know, they make us out to be haters. But, yeah, that's what we need to hammer home to every person we talk to on the street. Our ideology is fairness. We want fairness. And right now we are not living in that world that is fair. And they're into that, too. Believe me, that's going to go fast to our people.
Well, I don't know. I'd scare the shit out of them by trying to get a big movement to get the draft on and draft women.
Yeah.
Straighten out.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, that's what they do to us all the time. They play all these games on us. You know, we're just not as smart as they are, okay? They get a movement on just to get us reactionary. And we got to learn to play that game too there, you know. But I'll tell you, man, you talk about a draft and talk about, well, yeah, it's going to be women and men. You'll see how fast they turn that around.
Yeah, in equal proportions at that.
Exactly.
Except there's not going to be a draft of women or men, though. We're done with that.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing is, you know, they don't need. This is the situation that we have now. Is that they have enough people who are in economic despair and poverty that that's their last option. And, you know, this becomes their mercenary force. So, you know, I think a draft would create a huge anti-war movement if they started doing that. But they don't have to do that because they have enough people who voluntarily do it. So, you know, it's more evidence that we're not a nation. You know, we're just this huge system
Another thing that they're starting to do is, like, let illegal aliens join the military and give and let that be the path to citizenship. You know, we're literally in the last days of Rome, where, you know, Rome had no Roman armies. They just had a bunch of mercenary forces that were being led by Roman generals, you know. And
yeah, they already do that. Not with illegals, but I was in the army with plenty of non-citizens.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
They're called contractors.
I worked with a dude. I worked with a Puerto Rican guy who moved from Puerto Rico to Los Angeles, California, went through the entire – he moved when he was like 4 years old, and he went through the entire public school system, then joined the Marines after he got out of high school and never learned how to speak English properly. I mean, he could speak a pidgin bastardized form, but he was in a Spanish platoon. He was in a Spanish high school, had Spanish teachers, you know, and he never really had the need to speak English. It wasn't until he moved to
Army
Alabama.
Army has a recruiting center in Puerto Rico. They have a recruiting station in Puerto Rico.
Isn't that
anyway, I'm glad that you went to that meeting there. I think that's great.
I mean,
meeting other guys and all this kind of stuff, because we were hands-on when I was really into it heavy in New Jersey. It was hands-on, you know, like we got the only guy that was ever an independent voted state senate. So, you know, but that's what you got to do. You got to get that. You got to squeeze the flesh, let people see that, no, you don't have horns on you and all this kind of bullshit. I agree with that. But, you know, we need a garden approach, you know, and whatever works, then we got to go push that, and then when something else works, you know, that's how it's got to be. It's got to be fluid. Battle is fluid. War is fluid. It's not, you know, a set piece anymore. You know, that's for gamers, you know, game board thing there. It's fluid. So you got to be – but meeting people, because you know what? You set up relationships that will last for a long time, you know. It's not like meeting someone on the Internet. You don't hear them for a year.
The difference is, you know, the other thing is that you realize you're not alone and you're not isolated. I mean, you got the strength of numbers. It's like when – even though it was only for one night, you know, here I was and I know everybody there thinks – like me. I mean, you know, it's a little odder. I don't want to say creepy, because, you know, you always have doubt in your mind. Okay, is this person infiltrating us or not? But that kind of falls away when you are in person and you feel people out, you see what they say, how they react to what you're saying. You see what kind of knowledge base they have of all this. And, you know, you realize they're for real. You know, and it's funny. Like last night, you know, there was you know, one black girl there, believe it or not. And you know, I was kind of talking to her and trying to figure out, you know, what she. I mean, she was very enthusiastic. She was buying, you know, the books and everything. And I'm wondering, all right, is she for real or not? You know, and I gotta say, my assessment is either she's you know, a very good infiltrator, or you know, it seemed like she was genuine. She seemed to
someone you think to be an infiltrator.
You know, I said, well, are you working? I said, are you working for Slate or, you know, Huffington Post or some kind? You know, what, I mean, what's your angle here? You know, I mean, and she just said, you know, she understood, you know, the Jewish, you know, problem, and she also said she thinks that, you know, there is definitely an agenda against white people. You know, so she was either playing along really well, or she was genuine. But the fact is that, you know, I think it's just amazing how, you know, folks got to get to be racial in public. They've got to stop being afraid of calling out a spade as a spade, you know, with the J's, you know, and, you know, eventually people will get desensitized, you know, and the effect that all the fear has will go away. You know, the truth will set you free. It's like they say. I mean, that's it, man. You know, and unfortunately, yeah, we are up against, you know, all these lies, but, you know, it's the more people that stand up, the more emboldened we get. And I felt rejuvenated, energized last night because, you know, it was just great. Now, why can we replicate that? Can we reproduce that? And can we start doing things with other groups and connect, you know? I think it's just going to grow, man. I think something is happening here. So,
well, you got to do it in, like, chapters, you know, in cities and chapters and that kind of thing there, you know. So you have some continuity there. But I was just going to, about black people, there's a lot of conservative blacks that are doing okay. And, you know, I've had a couple years ago, last time I was talking to some guys from Newark, well, from New Jersey, they're not in Newark anymore, and they're saying, man, when are you guys going to step up? Because they can't stand living in the way things are, you know what I mean? They're used to it
right.
being calm and orderly, and, you know, so they, because life's better for them that way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because, I mean, the way it's going to be a jungle. It's just going to become a jungle if things keep
going.
Yeah,
they're worried about their kids' future, too, you know?
Well, you know, most of your intelligent blacks know that if they want to live in a first-world environment, they have to be the minority amongst white people, you know, because, you know, you get, like, look at Los Angeles, you know, they have Mexican police officers and Asian police officers now. You know, if they think they had it bad, you know, living under white cops, wait till these Mexicans and these Asians start becoming police officers. And, you know, they don't have this white guilt. They don't have this magnanimity, this altruistic nature. They don't give a damn, you know. And a lot of black people realize that, you know, being ran completely out of their neighborhoods. And they're right. I mean, hell. And, you know, most white people, I have not yet met an outright white supremacist that wants to, you know, make slaves out of other racists and all this and the other. Most white people have no ill will towards other races. You know, even us amongst the white nationalists, we just want to survive. You know, what's wrong with that?
I never heard that. I never heard that in my life. I only heard that on TV. I never bumped into that in my whole life, and I've been all around the place, man. I've never, ever heard of any of that bullshit. I mean, we fought, you know, we ended the slavery. And as far as these intelligent blacks, you know, they just want a fair shake, you know what I mean? That's all. They just want a fair shake.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have to decide now, you know, it's like going back to that Darwinian thing. No one's going to give this to us. No one's going to hand it to us. You know, we have to, or even,
got
you know,
that,
God
right.
helps God helps those who help themselves. I mean, really, that's
got
that's
that
it.
Right.
That's
you
it,
got
man.
That right.
So,
you got that.
But you guys, I don't know, anything else happening? Did you hear about anything more on the Heimbach thing with are there photos of that or anything else people can see maybe? You know, because I you know, other than you know, me being invited to it, I said, look, man, I had one sitting of Washington D.C. That was enough. You know, friggin' 6-7 hour drive in that bus. That was grueling. So, yeah, two events in a row, back to back, 2 days. You know, to me, that's a victory right there. You know, and I think more of this is going to happen now. That's why we need more groups. We need more people just getting out there. I don't care what you're doing, you know. So, yeah, if you guys want to come up with anything else, or maybe I'll take a break here. Any other topics to come
yeah,
around
I'd like
1 o'clock?
I'd like you to get Ranzel on your show there and find out what happened to him down there. He's a good man.
Oh, Robert? Robert Ranzel?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good man.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
good,
I love
that. Did he get out of jail? Well, he didn't even really get arrested that day, did he? What happened with his Senate campaign or whatever?
Good question. I don't know. I mean, I'm just guessing it didn't go anywhere, you know?
No, it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. No. I mean, did he get any media out of it or anything like that?
No,
I have no idea.
He got media out of it. I mean, for us, you know, there's value to stuff like that, you know, beyond winning. Obviously, you know, American Freedom Party is not going to start taking down Senate seats or anything like that. But the attention and just getting a chance to, you know, get your face out there and get your message out there, you know, Ransdell's great.
Yeah, I would like to see him run in county executive and or that sort of deal there and really have a really good shot. And deal with money because, you know, once you start getting those positions, look, the big money's in all those retirement funds, those education retirement funds and all those state public sector funds and everything else like that. There's real money in there, man, and you get to control that. And we're going to need those resources, you know. So, you know, forget about the federal government. I don't know. That might be good to get some attention, but, you know, realistically, it ain't going to get you nowhere, and you're not going to have any power because you're not going to be in a committee or any other damn thing. On the local level, on the state level, you actually got to do a job, you know. You actually do something instead of just vote. And
well, you know that's
just the skills we're going to need.
Well, you're right. And there was a guy in Pennsylvania. He was actually a member of the Keystone State Skinheads named Steve Smith, and he got elected to the he either got elected to the county commission or he got a or maybe a city council or something like that. And I think, as far as I know, he's still holding the seat. So you're right. I mean, that's where
Did
we have
you
to
know?
Go. His name's Steve Smith. And you can Google
right.
him.
And when you get your guys on those councils, then you get your other guys that can actually lobby for your county into the state and into the federal government. And believe it or not, half the states will give, if you're a lobbyist and you lobby for community, you get a state pension, you know. And this is, you know, how we're going to drain money back from the system.
Absolutely, guys. I think we're, I don't know if we're about to get kicked off or just go into the overtime. I think it's just the overtime. Keystone State Skinheads, I did go to an event hosted them, I remember it was like they had some bands. It was way out in Amish country, and I got knocked pretty hard by this kid wearing the shirt that said "Not Kosher" in a mosh pit. I remember that, I absolutely, man. I think we got to start doing things out there. I don't care how big you have of a group. Don't worry about being embarrassed or looking like a fool. I mean, like, it just seems like now you got to kind of be a little crazy to be a racialist now. Because really, you have everything to lose, so little gain as an individual, look from a selfish motive. But looking at it in the long haul, in the long term, if we don't do it, then we're screwed. We're all screwed together. So what else?
When you organize locally, you guys should be organizing to actually do something for the local community, to start getting yourselves really embedded in the local community, and that's where you're going to get a lot of support, man. Actually doing things, you know, like a la Golden Dawn. I mean, we used to have breakfasts and all that kind of stuff there. And after a while, people get to know you and everything. It doesn't matter what anybody says against you because they personally know you. They personally know that you've done something, what you really represent. So it's hard to slander you.
Well, yeah, no, I think in
America, there's skills we need. There's skills we
need.
It's
a mixed bag. I mean, you're gonna have friends and foes, but you're not gonna get those friends by not being out there. So forget the foes, you know, just pull in the friends. And also, you could target your audience and go for areas that are already kind of susceptible to your views, that are a little more conservative or, racially aware. I mean, it's obvious. You don't have to be a genius to figure out what groups and subgroups are going to, go along with this type of stuff. You know, you go to a shooting range, yeah, you might have some neocons there, but you'll find a lot of people that are implicitly racialist, a NASCAR rally, whatever. I mean, it's not going to be found at some left-wing kind of, humanitarian mission for Africa. So, I mean, I don't know. I think our people are out there. We just got to find them.
We used to do things like we used to actually run the little leagues and everything else like that, and that's how we got to meet a lot of the parents, especially the mothers and things like that. So, you know, a lot of things to do. Just, white people used to be involved in their community. Now it's like everybody's texting on text phones and minding their own business sort of deal there. And we gotta be the opposite of that and get that community spirit back in there and build up those alliances. Because, you know, after you break down all the bullshit with people, they have the same fears as you. They honestly do. They have the same fears.
Sure, sure. And, you know, I guess the other thing is just trying to find families that already are units there, or starting your own family. I mean, it just seems like it's a huge thing here. You know, we're all trying to find our way in life, you know, and we're part of something that is, it's so important. It's such an epic struggle here. And if, you know, you got to try to, you know, win, you know, choose your battles, pick your battles, and, you know, do what you can do. Don't bite off more than you can chew, and have realistic goals, I think, you know, and that's it, because I think there's there's too much over analysis, a lot of talking, and you know, less action. But you know, that's changing now. So you know, that's all I really have to say. I don't know, you guys. There's still about four of us all together. You guys want to get your last points in? Maybe I'm kind of shot. I mean, yesterday took a lot out of me, and you know, I can't really. I don't know what else to really say about it. If you guys had any other questions, you know, like I said, I wasn't there for the whole thing, but you know, I tried to give an outline of what did transpire. There was you know, that was about it on my end. You guys want to come in with any new topics or ask any questions about last night? Because I think we're gonna start.
I had a question before you ended the show.
Sure.
Sometimes I work too hard and I lose track of like actually keeping up with everything. But whatever happened with the like all the conspiracy world and stuff, like with Jim Trafficant when he died, is there any conspiracy going on with that at all?
No.
It seems strange. It was like he died in a tractor accident, and that was it. And I never heard nothing else about it.
No, that's a damn good question. We know he was one of us. So when any one of us dies suddenly, I think that is something to look into. Sure.
Well, I mean, he was old, you know, but yeah, it was just weird. It was like a tractor accident or something weird like that.
Well,
the
guy that was going to buy the vehicle. They said he was from out of town, and he called the accident and then disappeared. And but I think it was just an accident, the way it sounds, the way it flipped. Personally,
Everything's got like six conspiracy theories going with it, so that's why I thought there might be something out there.
That's a sign of the times. Look who
It's almost like General Patton, you know. Was it just an accident, or was it you know, I don't know if I would. It'd be a perfect analogy there, but it probably isn't. But yeah, absolutely. You know.
Well, I don't know. I just expected some story to be out there somewhere, but nobody's heard anything other than just the normal story, I guess.
I didn't know he died.
Well,
when did this happen?
I think it was a few months ago.
But, I mean, unless you got something solid, I wouldn't be putting anything out there.
I'm not trying to spread rumors.
Yeah, I wanted to say that our biggest fight's is with our own race, really, if you really analyze it. And most white nationalists, I think, have got to win their own families over. I think that's their first job.
Well, sure. I mean, and if you can't win them over, you got to cut them loose or cut yourself loose. I don't know. Not everyone's going
to
be won over. You know, I mean, you're going to lose some people, I think.
Well, you know, the race comes first.
Absolutely.
Before anything.
Hey, by the way, guys, we need to also bring up minor you know, things we see in life that are positive things too. I have to admit, I had the greatest experience at work the other day. Some girl sitting next to me, the guy was like, "Hey, you look like you might be part Hispanic." She was like, "No, I'm white, pure white." And she, like, looked at me with this great fucking look, and the guy was like, "Oh, well, I'm engaged to some Hispanic chick, blah, 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 blah." You know what I mean? She, like, looked at me, you know what I mean? It was really a great, and at work, it was really a wonderful experience. So, it's, you know, guys, keep your eye out in the world, and there's good shit going on out there, too.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we got a new racially, you know, they're pushing Will Smith with some beautiful blonde movie, Focus, I think it's called. Then you, I mean, there was another movie, Obsessed, I saw on television. I mean, it's just, my hatred for TV is just, I don't know what else to say. I mean, but it is what it is. I mean, it's no surprise at this point.
You know, that's what I mean. If we had some political power in the state and started saying cutting off welfare, you'd see a lot less of them hanging around with them because, you know, that's the fastest way to single motherhood and, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
amen.
People understand
yeah.
economics. They understand economics really, really well, especially women.
This is true. You guys, I really appreciate you having me on the show tonight. I don't call in almost ever. I love the show. I'll try and call in more. And
yeah, do that, man. Get, you know, just any time, man, whether it's my show or the Roundtable or anyone's show, you know, just feel free, man. This is the more voices we have, it spices it up and brings in other views, and that's what we want to see. So,
I love the host. I love the people that call in. So I'll try and call on more. I just worked too much. So I'm normally, even when I listen to the shows, it's like already recorded or whatever. But, yeah, you guys, keep up the good work up there. There's a lot of people listening that don't call in, I'm sure, that want to say thanks. So keep it up as long as the net neutrality don't shut y'all down.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well,
I'm glad you
made that trip, Dana, man. Get out there and press the flesh and, you know, see who's out there and what's what and everything else like that. I think good, you know.
No, I don't know if I'm going to write. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to write something up. I wanted to give a speech, but I got there so late, you know, and but maybe next time, you know. And that's the thing is now that I've met all these guys and, you know, I'm not a first-time face. I was just so happy to see so many people there aware of Renegade, you know, and they were really you know, they were really enthusiastic, you know, to just, you know, making connections with people that you might already know through Facebook or through, you know, like our network or other channels. You know, it's like it's just this familiar feeling, like all the Internet activity and boom, now you got these people concentrated in one room.
You should go down to Flooza. You should go down to Flooza next July.
Oh, where is that, Pennsylvania or where
yeah,
do they have that?
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
I think I'm friends with the guy that is that Pody, Paul Topetti or something.
Paul Topetti, Tara Beth, all those guys. But there's a lot of people. The Rizzoli brothers were there last year. You know, a lot of people show up.
I'll try and make it out for that. There's American Renaissance. So there's you know whatever you guys find, keep your eye on it and let us know. You know, and that's about it. Is Texas, you still on with us, and Jeb?
I'm still here in Texas.
Yeah, any closing ideas? Because I think I'm going to just cash out tonight because I'm just exhausted. Because I basically didn't sleep this whole time. Because I had to go to work today. I got home at, I basically went right into work from the trip. But, if you had any other thoughts, comments, closing comments?
Yeah, just to keep with the theme of the show, I mean, face-to-face, I'm, you know, excited about the idea of being able to meet in a place and have live discussions with people, and the more we can get of that, the better, you know, just like we've been saying all night. And kind of in line with that, just the public speech, this, I think we're already going down that path where you're going to start to see more and more people saying things in public that they wouldn't have said before, standing up for the race and just not paying as much of a price as they have before. And then the more people that are willing to say things in public and just speak the truth, it's just going to all start rolling downhill, and the movement's going to gather momentum. So, you know, that's the key. You know, when people do get attacked for speaking their mind, I really think that, you know, we have to come together and start attacking the attackers. I mean, when you hear about a company firing someone for their racial views, well, you know, we need to be able to organize a boycott and do things like that. We need to, that's just something I've been thinking about. We need to start to, you know, attack the attackers in that way.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, we still got even our little, you know, racially aware people still have, you know, a big pocketbook to really affect somebody.
And yeah, and the way most margins are in business, you know, you don't have to kill their whole, you know, cash flow. I mean, you knock down 10% of someone's business, I mean, that is just a crippling blow.
Yeah, someone doesn't get a bonus.
Yeah, that whole Chick-fil-A thing, too.
Their girlfriend leaves them.
I think that was great. That was a good positive sign, you know, when that company was, you know, had a good, great turnout after all that quote-unquote controversy or whatever over that shit. But, yeah, there are some positive signs that we have an immune system coming back, maybe, you know, and white people are going to start retaliating or standing up for themselves and defending themselves. And, you know, I think more and more the finger is going to be pointed on the true culprit, you know, which we all know is other than those who aid and abet within our own ranks. Yeah, we've got, you know, we've got the chosen race out there to contend with. So, I mean, yeah, we're coming along here. You know, keep on trucking. That's all you can do. So I want to thank you guys for being on tonight. There are some other issues I'll get into on my own show. I didn't want to bring them up on the roundtable because this is really your night. You know, I talked about the conference last night because it was just on my immediate mind here. But, yeah, there's more to come. And I thank you all for being with me. So I guess we'll go out with that. I'm gonna just probably play something. I was really disappointed to see ISIS destroy that ancient Syrian winged bull from 700 BC. So I don't know. I'll probably talk more about that on my show. But I'm gonna play a band that has Syrian members in there. Called Melakesh, and we're gonna go out with that. So you guys, thanks for being with me, and we'll be back. Please listen to all the shows on Renegade Broadcasting. This is Incendium Between Mirage and Time, and we will be with you. Take care.